You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is Tanya Pinkins. Welcome back for part two of my conversation with Joanne Zippel of Zip Creative.
Well, that's the other thing about the work that I do is that your creative work doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Right.
And so the life coaching aspect of it is, how do I look at my life, my entire life, not just my work life? Because, you know, you have these other desires in your vision. How do I want my family to be? There are people who want to get married and have children. There are people who don't. There are people who have children. There are, you know, and so how do I balance what I'm doing in my creative career with my other part of my life?
Yeah.
And that. And I think that is really an important aspect of being able to do your best work, is that you have to, you know, and to also have some kind of downtime, or, you know, and to also be able to have time for yourself, have time for your family, have time for whatever it is that's not your work.
You know? Yeah, that, I think that was one of the questions that I was asking myself just yesterday, which was, you know, there are these ideas of what your children should be doing at various ages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of mine aren't. And I like to try to hold the space for them that it's all going to work out and that they're mm-hmm. exactly where they are. But at the same time, there's the way I was raised. And, you know, I was raised in a very punitive way. And there's like, you need to, you know, people are like, you need mm-hmm. to just throw them out on the street and you need to do, 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 do. And it's like, that's not who I am.
No,
I'm not throwing anybody out on the street.
Right.
So that's not even an option. Mm-hmm. I'm not that person. I couldn't live with that. So having to say, well, I'm going to just have to live with being annoyed and unhappy with the choices that they're making and trusting that that's going to work out, mm-hmm. you know, for the best in the long right. run, even though right now I don't approve or like it, but I
don't. And they probably don't like your judgment either.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's like, how do you just love them?
Yeah. That's what I've been working on. How do I just love
my children? And trust them.
And trust. It's hard. That is probably the hardest thing in my life.
As a mom, I totally get that. I totally get it. But on the other hand, you know, as I've been able to just let go of that, some of that, you know, like the way it should be or why I thought it should be or the way my parents thought it should be or, you know, whatever that was, and see them for who they are, which is, you know, they're very different than me, you know, but it's, and give them that space and support them, you know, it's really empowering, not only to them, but to you as well, to just be able to just, you know, take a deep breath. It's hard.
It's really hard. And I feel like I've been doing that. And then mm-hmm. it's like, okay, it's, you know, I think that I have an expectation that, okay, after I do it for a while, something's going to change and it's not changing fast enough.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, but they're not you. I mean,
right.
You know, they have to live their lives. How old are they?
20.
All?
No. I'm most concerned about. My kids are 32, 29, 23, and 20.
Oh, wow. Okay. Big range.
Big range. Yeah. And all adults, like. I can't uh-huh. make
sure,
them tell them to do anything, but mm-hmm.
That's true. You can't make them do anything.
I can't make them do anything.
And you know, they all have different personalities, and they are who they are. And so, you know, it's if you try to push too hard, then you know there's clashes. And what is it that you know? What is it that you? Why you feel you need them to be a certain way?
I think that I...
And I'm not a therapist, by the way.
No. But I think that I see them struggling. Mm-hmm. And I know that my way when I'm struggling or depressed mm-hmm. is to look for help.
Right.
Like I go, I need help. Is it in a book? Is it in a person? Is mm-hmm. it in a doctor? I'm a proactive person. I think that most people wouldn't even be aware that most of my life I was depressed.
Mm, really?
But my way of dealing with depression is to get active. Mm-hmm. And theirs is to completely retreat from everything. So it's just a way I don't know how to be. I don't understand it. It scares me. I come from a family where there's a lot of mental illness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm usually like, okay, is this mental illness? And, you know, I've seen really tragic consequences of that. So it pushes a lot of buttons mm-hmm. and fear for me around that.
Right. And I think it's when you are connected to that fear place, even if you're not saying something to them, they can feel it energetically, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
You know? So it's like, you know, being able to sort of not go there, to really go to that trust place and say, and you know, you can make suggestions and they may not agree, but sometimes it might.
I don't think any of my children have ever followed any of my suggestions. Your children follow your suggestions?
They're both not really.
They send other people to me for advice.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know. I think my daughter who's also a theater maker. She's she's in the business. So, you know, sometimes she'll actually ask my opinion. Wow.
So she can go, okay, I'm not going to do that.
Anyway, no, but
that was some of my women friends.
That was a big thing because she never would, you know. Right, so I think we're making some progress, but also, you know, your child is 20. You know, they're going to grow up and they're going to. You have to remember that
their brain isn't even fully
formed.
I know.
So you know, maybe just letting go a little bit.
I know.
Trusting and let it, you know, just because you're going to feel better too. Just breathe, you know.
Many days I can do that. There are many, many days that I'm able to do that. And certainly as I get deeper into my own work, I almost forget about them. But in this particular moment where I'm not deeply ensconced in something, you know, I have all this attention that's focused there. So when you ask me about me or my career, I think I know what the question is. My old-fashioned understanding of the press and the media, and I don't even know that this applies anymore because I haven't had the opportunity to do it, is that when something goes big, it is the result of a long process of laying the groundwork. And my only example is that when I won the Tony for Jelly's Last Jam, which is 30 years ago, right. The world has changed a lot.
Right.
My publicist and I were writing stories, making sure there was great photography. Mm-hmm. And we were sending that stuff out for 6-8 months before anyone was even interested in anything about me. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as I got the first nomination for, I don't know if it's the Drama Desk, suddenly all those things we've been doing for that time hit. And I was like in People Magazine 6 weeks in a row. But it was because we'd been laying the groundwork for something for a long time. Well, is it still work that way?
I think so, sure. I mean, you have to find ways to, and I guess that's, you know, we're talking about that whole quote brand or whatever, which I don't love that word anymore.
What's the word you like? What do you think of it as?
I don't know. I think it's more just what am I about, you know? But I guess branding is a word you have to use, you can use just because it's not the same thing as marketing, by the way. Branding and marketing are two different things.
Wait a minute, what's the difference?
Right. Branding is really about that, what it is you're about, your mission or your, you know, purpose.
Okay, so my mission and my purpose is to make stories that I can be proud of, that speak to the world in ways that are going to activate them for the good, for a higher good.
Yes.
That would be my brand and mission.
That's very well articulated. So you know that. Your marketing is, what am I going to do to get that word out there? That's where, am I going to do social media? Am I going to hire a publicist? Am I going to do all those things? And in what way? Am I going to have... do events around it. You know,
like for instance, for clarifying that,
it's yeah, and that was that's a big distinction, and that's why I think doing that, and I encourage all my clients to do that work of why am I doing this? What's my purpose? You know, and when people start companies, they have their mission. You know, what is it that is my? I encourage people and artists to do an artistic statement, and that's not just your bio. Like I did this, I did that. No, this is you articulated your purpose really clearly, which I think is fantastic. So you're there, but that's your brand is what it is you want to be doing.
Mm.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Now, you have this wonderful thing on your website called Fast Forward Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
which I would love for you to do.
We're going to do it together.
We're going to do it together
because I looked on there and I saw that you had only answered like the first three questions.
Who had only answered?
You did. On your Zip Creative website, of these questions that you ask every guest artist on Fast Forward Fridays, you had only answered three of them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Did you not know that?
Well, because I didn't really interview myself.
Oh, well, these three questions, they're answers from you on the website.
Oh, really?
Which did not?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's interesting.
Here we go. So we'll both answer these questions.
Okay.
We'll go to you first. What are you currently working on? Tell us about it.
Oh, okay. Well,
and let me just start before we answer that. This is from the Zip Creative website. Every Friday, there's something called Fast Forward Fridays.
Not every Friday. It's like every couple of weeks.
They're really great questions. This series of questions is fantastic where you get to understand an artist's process and really just good questions for any artist to ask themselves. So Joanne and I are going to do it right now.
Wow. All right.
So what are you currently working on? Tell us about it.
Well, in addition to we're still doing the marketing phase of Bite Me, which is the film that I executive produced. It's about a young woman who identifies as it's a romantic comedy. It identifies as a real life vampire who falls in love with the IRS agent who's auditing her. You saw it,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah, it's funny and it stars Naomi McDougal Jones, who wrote that book that mm-hmm. we were talking about earlier, and Christian Coulson, who played Tom Riddle in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, and Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story, and Annie Golden of Broadway, and also from Orange Is the New Black.
Yes.
Yeah. So that. We are still in release technically.
Okay.
We did a 3-month Joyful Vampire Tour of America in 2019, where we went to 40 cities, 51 screenings all around the country. Naomi and her husband and a documentary filmmaker were in an RV and literally circumvented the United States.
And that's how we met because I was talking to you to see if that was something that I might want to do for my film, Red Pill.
Right, exactly. Which, you know. I don't know if that's still something you're thinking about.
I don't know. Me in an RV. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not
Maybe
the
not
camping
an
girl. I'm not the camping girl. And I'm working on my first independent feature film, which is called Red Pill. It's a sociopolitical horror film that stars Ruben Blades, Catherine Irby, of Law and Order, Ruben Blades, international star, and getting the Harvard Medal of Arts, first Latin man to ever get that. Kathy Curtin of Orange is the New Black and Insecure and Stranger Things and so many other things. Adeshila Osaka-Lumi of, what is that, Beatles movie, Across the World or something, the Julie
Across
Tamer
the
movie?
Universe.
Across the Universe and Fela and who else? Colby Menifee, who's on The Boys. And I am in the editing phase. I have an incredible team, Julie Taymor's entire sound team, T. Skull and Paul Sue and Michael Berry and Carter Little are going to do the sound for my film. So we are waiting for an edit. My editor's from Two Sentence Horror Story and Random Acts of Flyness. So I'm in edit. As I said, I thought I was going to be in screening, and I have a whole bunch of venues that want to do private screenings for me in May and June in various places in the country.
So that might be your, instead of a tour, but that's kind of like that.
Getting that really done.
And building an audience that way.
Perhaps. Yeah. Or, and trying to strategize how to do that. Right. So what was the inspiration and impetus for Bite Me?
Well, it was Naomi's project, obviously, but we were working together at the time. When I first read it, I was coaching her, and then I ended up managing her, and then I became an executive producer. She was on the set, I think, of Boardwalk. She'll tell you all this, I'm sure. But she was on the set of Boardwalk Empire. She was acting in it, and it was a long day, and she happened to talk to one of the background actors who, you know, they was like 16 hour a day and they were talking, you know, what do you do, blah, blah. And she revealed to her that she was a real vampire. And she was like, well, I'm a writer. Tell me everything, you know, that there really existed. These people existed. And yeah. I think she also wanted to write a story that made people happy and laugh because she had, her first feature was a pretty serious drama about mental illness, actually, which she won a ton of awards for. But this was something that she just really wanted to,
some joy.
Yeah, and also she wanted to have a protagonist, a female protagonist who, you know, could be unusual and have difficulties and who kind of could get the guy, but at the end and didn't have to take her glasses off, you know? Mm-hmm. It was like that kind of thing. And so I think there was a number of reasons why she, and I read the script early on and I was just, wow, this is so funny. This is so original. It's so clever because it is very clever. And I said, yeah, you got to make this, you know? And then I brought Jack Lechner on, who was another executive producer with me, who's done a ton of things. He was an executive for years for Miramax and HBO and Channel 4, and he's now a professor at Columbia, but he also produced the Academy Award-winning Fog of War and and Blue Valentine with Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams. So, you know, just so smart. And so he came on board, and then it was a long haul. You
know? Yeah, and so, it still is because you're still in
right. Release. Well, we're on Amazon, Google Play, and iTunes, so you can watch it online. And as a result of that tour, we were really able to get offers. We got some distribution offers, not ones that we particularly wanted to take, but then we got a sales agent on board, who's now in Berlin at the EFM, you know,
selling it internationally to the international markets.
And hopefully to get a domestic, like a pay TV deal. So
nice. You
know, so we're doing that.
Well, Red Pill, I guess, is a long story of me having a life of always being a little ahead of the world. I just, as a child, I would know things before they were going to happen. My mother had that, and she was schizophrenic, so it wasn't something I was proud of. And whenever I tried to ever like let people know, like, hey, this terrible thing's gonna happen, let's like make it happen, that would always make it worse. And so it's really something I really kind of suppressed. And when the last election was happening, I just like, I knew who was gonna win. It was pretty clear. And anytime I brought that up to people, I, in New York at least, I was treated with contempt. I was treated like I had two heads. And I remember being more afraid than I had ever been, because I just thought, if people don't understand, if people can't see the writing on the walls, we're in danger. I was terrified. I was terrified. And I remember my union, for 103 years, this is Actors Equity, had a in the Constitution that we did not ever support political candidates, because the members are every candidate, every kind of, you know, political position. And that was a constitutional, you know, rule. And in the last election, I remember arguing vehemently that this was not the time to change it. Do not change it. And, you know, they did change it. And subsequently, the tax laws, which really hurt actors hard, came out. And so there was this sort of powerlessness of, I mean, I think I realized early in my life that when I was getting information about things, it wasn't for me to change it. Mm-hmm. I was just getting a heads up, like, gas up. Wow. There's about to be an oil strike or something like that. And last summer, I was with a friend, and we were talking about the mass shootings. And she said something that I felt, it was this sort of typical progressive, you know, we're so smart and we're so mm-hmm. elite and those stupid people kind of thing. And it was kind of almost in a like a flash over the next couple of days, this dystopian story about this posse of progressives riding to Red Country the weekend of the election, armed with their heart, humor, and naivete, but they should have brought some heavy artillery. It just came to me. And we made that movie in from the end of July, mid-November, we were in the can, which I think is pretty remarkable for a first-time filmmaker.
Wow, yeah.
Who are your artistic heroes? Who have had an impact on your work?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I haven't answered these questions. You really, I'm not prepared.
I'll start. You can think while I start. So my artistic heroes.
I was not expecting this.
George C. Wolfe.
Okay.
Who is a brilliant writer, director, producer, artist who, once you've worked with him, you are ruined for life. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just ruined for life. Jennifer Kent and Jane Campion as
Jennifer
filmmakers.
Absolutely.
Just powerful women telling powerful stories their own way. Gail Ann Hurd, because she produces all the big horror, action, alien, Terminator. Adore her. Milan Kundera, Unbearable Lightness of Being. Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Who else? There's so many. There really are so many. But you can jump in as soon as you know.
Well, Jennifer Kent is amazing.
Jennifer Kent is amazing.
Truly,
yeah. And I think that for me, like, one of the things I often ask my students is to write a list of the people you want to work for, because I do think in your consciousness, as you set that vision, then when projects come up, if you find out that they're any way peripherally associated with it, you're already setting a vision for getting in the room with those people. That's how I choose my work, is who's in the room.
Right. Absolutely.
Who's in the room?
Also, Paula Vogel is one of my, my you know, heroes. I worked with her very early on in my career, and, you know, she is just everything. You know, she her work is so eloquent, but and funny, and everything that she does is just, I would say she's one of my big heroes. And also what she has done to open up doors for artists, you know, amazing. I mean, I think, Naomi McDougall-Jones, I would say that she is an inspiration to a lot of people, you know. Oh God, there's just I mean, last night I went to see that production of West Side Story.
Oh, yes. Yvonne Van Hove, definitely up on my list.
And, yeah, and the choreographer, too. I was so moved by it.
Yeah.
I just was...
The audaciousness of it.
I loved it. I mean, but I was viscerally and emotionally so touched by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are there any other projects you want to tell us about?
Well, yes, I'm actually working on another feature that I'm working with a director by the name of Kirsten Carl Huber. It's her second feature. And it's it was written by Jack Bryant. It's based on his family. And it's called Rearview Mirrors. And it's about three generations of women in the rural South, a grandmother, a mother, and her 15-year-old biracial daughter. And the mother she's bipolar. She's had a lot of issues. She's older, but she can't really take care of her kids. So the grandmother, who's a very a devout Christian woman, she takes care of the granddaughter. And the grandmother has a stroke, and the mother has to come back and take care of the mother and the daughter and reestablish a relationship. And it is a beautiful, beautifully rendered story. Three fantastic roles for actresses. But it's really about, because the grandmother, once she has this stroke, her personality changes, and all these secrets and things that happened in the past come back. And it is really ultimately a very uplifting story about being able to look at your past and connect and forgive and find a way to forgive.
Yeah, that sounds too much like my real life.
But it's real tour de force roles for actresses, and we're in the process of getting. We have a casting director who's working on it, and I don't want to talk about it.
Okay,
I
we'll let that go. But I'm waiting for my editor to finish. I'm working on my next horror movie, which will be my second feature, which is called Match.Die, and it's another socio-horror. Wouldn't be socio-political, but it's a horror film about the dangers of the dating world, and it involves a woman who is a complete Luddite and has no involvement in anything electronic, and then finds herself caught up in online dating and the nightmare that takes her in. Mm-hmm. What's an instance of you living in your vision?
Going to those events on the tour. And seeing people.
The vampires came out on the tour.
It was everybody. It was a joyful vampire tour. So people came and they dressed in whatever made them feel joyful, not just vampires.
Okay, so people weren't like cutting each other.
Remember, these
aren't
supernatural vampires.
They really do drink blood.
Yeah.
That means, did some blood drinking happen at these events?
No, they don't. No. But what it was to see that movie and see people respond to that movie on the screen, the big screen, and people just, that was truly living my vision, I would say.
Moment of me living in my vision.
Yeah.
I think a moment of me living in my vision was, I had a moment on set where I had this sense that the thing that I most never wanted in my life and the thing that I most wanted in my life, I realized as I was making this movie, they were both intertwined. I never wanted to be a leader because I never wanted to lead anybody astray, because I feel like every time I learn something, a few years later, I learn that it's much more than I thought. And so I always feel like I can't really tell anybody anything. I can tell you where I am right now because I know it's going to change. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted a team. And I've always been in the room with the best of the best people. And whenever I've tried to make a team out of them, it just never has happened. And I was standing there and I was like, oh my God, I have a team. And oh my God, this team is here because of my vision, my idea. I gotta trust that I'm not gonna lead them astray. Oh shit. So that was a moment of me living in my vision, a surprising one.
Wonderful. Yeah.
If there were no barriers to entry, what is the one thing you would be doing?
Well, I would be making more movies for sure. I would be producing more movies. But because obviously it's a struggle to get the financing, you know, and I think that would be, I would definitely be making more stories, and I'd be supporting more artists. I would be doing a lot more.
I would say that's the mm-hmm. same for me. If mm-hmm. no barriers, I would be making a feature film every year and probably a musical or a play mm-hmm. every year. I would do both. Right. What's been the biggest obstacle in achieving your vision?
I mean, I'm in a place now, particularly in terms of my work, where I feel that it's a really good place. And you know, you were saying about this, you know, as you get older, you just feel more empowered in what you're doing. And I think that has been really good for me. So in terms of obstacles, I think a lack of understanding, other people's lack of understanding. I mean, like for me, you know, and not being able to, I mean, you know, what's going on in the world right now? Obviously, there are people that there's fear. There's a lot of fear. And I think that is other people's fear and not wanting to do things or not being able to do things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And for me, I think the biggest obstacle for me that I'm just starting to see, because I think before I blamed it on myself, is the awareness that, and I don't care, but I think that there's something in the ether that says a woman who's in this body, in this gender, is not supposed to have the freedom and choices that I give myself. And so the world just can't bear that I mm-hmm. give myself the choices and opportunities that I have and try to put up obstacles to me doing what I want to do. Mm-hmm. If you could let go of something that held you back, what would it be?
Now or in the... Okay.
You that, put this on put your side,
if
right.
If I could let go of something that held me back, what would it be? I think, well, I'm thinking about what it used to be, but I feel just allowing to let things happen and not put, you know, my judgment on it.
For me, it would be my sugar addiction. I'm a sugar addict. I think of it like alcoholism. I am a sugar addict. Who do you admire most, living or dead?
My father was a pretty extraordinary guy. Mm. He passed away about a year and a half ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And he was a remarkable human being and just one of these people who reached out to people and he was such a force in a loving way. He was, you know, kind and loving and strong, and he was someone who stood up for people, and he was a great role model for me and my brother, you know. And I still miss him. Still miss him.
Yeah. For me, it would be Sister Morningstar, who is my solstra. She's a Catholic hermitess nun who I've traveled the world with, setting up women's circles, and she was the midwife for my fourth child in Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. If you could be known or celebrated for one thing, what would it be?
Helping people to connect to their love and their strength.
And for me, it would be that I was a good mother.
Hmm.
Guilty pleasure?
Pleasure. HGTV, you know, watching those shows, you know.
Oh, my guilty pleasure. My guilty pleasure. Massage.
I don't think you should have guilt about that. I probably shouldn't have guilt about that.
If you could sit down with yourself 15 years ago, what would you say?
You have the power. You are powerful. And, you know, just let that happen.
I think I would say, don't marry him. Don't do it. Where would you most like to live?
That's a good question, because I'm sort of going through a soul searching about that right now, because I'm living currently in New Hope, Pennsylvania, which is beautiful. I moved there for love.
And is the love still going?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And now we're trying to figure out, where else do we want to be? And there might be somewhere else I want to be. So
you all are figuring it out.
Someplace where it's warmer in the winter, but not all the time. Like, I don't think I would want to be in just one place, you know.
And I've been doing that search for the last few years, and I was thinking Bali, Mexico, Brazil. And I finally moved into an apartment in New York where, for the first time in my life, I'm enjoying New York. I turned down Juilliard because it was in New York. Chicago.
Chicago.
Never wanted to live in New York. And for the first time in 40 years, I am enjoying New York. Wow. So very grateful for that. What's your idea of success?
Being able to do what my vision tells me, and to be able to connect with my family and be close, and to connect with those I love.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. For me, having relationships that aren't just transactional, really connecting with people and being able to create and collaboratively create with other people. And that would, for me, that's also my happiness.
Yeah.
What's your happiness?
Yeah, I would say that's my happiness is, you know, being able to love the people around me.
And these last two questions aren't from you. They're from me.
Okay.
What is needed?
Well, I think our political leadership has failed us. And it's not where we should be looking to. I think we need to look to ourselves and to what we can as individuals do within our power to shape the world and to impact each other and be there, because I don't think our politics are broken. And how can we, as, you know, with all our strengths and our talents and our vision, help create the world that we see and connect with others in the wherever we are?
And before we wrap up, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wanted to talk about, anything you wanted to ask me?
Wow. I mean, this was quite a... an experience of, and I think we really covered a lot of ground, haven't we?
Yeah. Like
everything from, you know, oneness to, you know, how to talk on social media. I think that's a lot. But this is really fun.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
Really fun.
It was
so
really
nice
a pleasure
to connect
to
with you.
Connect with you, and I hope we will stay connected off platform.
Absolutely.
I'm Tanya Pinkins, and you're listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can on the Broadway Podcast Network. Thanks for listening to You Can't Say That, the show where you can. I'm Tanya Pinkins, and You Can't Say That is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals. Edited by Derek Gunther. With music by Kat Dale. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast highly wherever you stream. Follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Tanya Pinkins. And to learn more, visit bpn.fm/YCST. Stay safe. This is Tanya Pinkins.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com. And of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.